Hot Hoops, your Triple H podcast, the podcast for Miami Heat fans on our blog. Now, here we are. It probably isn't the way where we thought we would be this season. We are not in the playoffs. Our dreams of possibly making 4, 5, 6th seed hasn't happened, but here we are. We're holding our heads high. We're moving forward, and we're going to now have a bit of a chat about some of the things that have happened this season. Joining me is Ernest Christian and David Ramil. Guys, how are we feeling today? We are not going to be playing this weekend. Are you smiling? Are you upset? How are you going?
Actually, I'm doing pretty well about it, to be honest with you. I'm not disappointed that they didn't make the playoffs. I thought the challenge was pretty insurmountable for most of the season. And as you start to see them kind of, you know, deal with those constant injuries and you realize that they're not really going to be a challenger in the postseason, what's the point? I mean, and conversely, you look at the fact that they might be able to get an early draft pick, something that they haven't had the luxury of having in a number of years. I'm feeling pretty good about it, to be honest with you.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. I feel a little depressed at times.
Do you? Really?
A little bit. I mean, because, you know, you want to still be here. You still want to be in contending, you know, even though it was stacked against us, obviously, to win even a playoff series against either Atlanta or Cleveland. You still want to be able to have a chance to at least see what this team can do. But obviously, you know, as you saw the mounting injuries and the chemistry issues, and we were dressing D-leaguers after D-leaguer after D-leaguer, literally and figuratively speaking, it became evident that it was definitely a hard task. And then you had the teams below us who were starting to surge at the right time. But at the same time, I am encouraged about the future. I'm actually working on an article for the site this weekend about that.
That site is hothoothoops.com. but I think what it is for most people, it was a pride thing as a Miami Heat fan. We knew there was no point of us being in the playoffs because, man, we're going to be out within first round, most likely, if we're up against the Hawks or Cavs. I think it was more like our egos as fans and the social media aspect. We don't want to be, you know, laughed at, we don't want people harassing us because our team was shit because we'd lost LeBron, blah, blah, blah. So I think that's what it really was. For example, I was thinking the other night watching OKC play against the Wolves, and then you had the Pelicans playing the Spurs. I think for Thunder fans, the way they went out hurt a hell of a lot more than it did for us. Right. What do you guys think? David?
Well, I mean, I write about the Thunder quite a bit, so I've got a pretty unique perspective there. But, I mean, it's actually very closely related. I think they mirror one another. I mean, Sears, you can't compare the loss of LeBron James, but the number of injuries that impacted both teams. I mean, we went through 30 different starting lineups in Miami. They went through a similar number in Oklahoma City. You lose Kevin Durant, you lose Serge Ibaka, you lose Russell Westbrook early in the season. There are definitely some comparisons there. So, I mean, I think they had hopes with a talent like Westbrook that maybe they might be able to shock the Golden State Warriors. So maybe there's a little bit more hope from an Oklahoma City Thunder fan perspective. But at the same time, I don't think that they, either Miami or Oklahoma City, had legitimate chances of advancing any further past the first round. So, I mean, I understand the pain aspect for a Miami Heat fan or the pride aspect maybe. But seriously, without the only matchup I would have been interested in seeing would have been against the Cleveland Cavaliers. You know, that's the drama. That would have been the excitement, the energy there, the chance to take LeBron on and possibly, by the slimmest of margins, hope to maybe even knock him out of the first round. That would have been the only matchup.
That would have been so much fun.
What I wasn't going to happen with the roster we were dressing from March on. I mean, I feel robbed still. Cause think about where we were the day we got Goran Dragic. Think about the day when we
elation
on that Friday. Think about what the story
elation top four predictions. It was all happening.
Every analyst on ESPN, on Fox Sports, CBS Sports, you know, you name it, you got it. All saying that this Heat team will be the most dangerous team in the playoffs in either conference because of the starting five and of course, you know what Gore makes to the table. But then you have, of course, hours later about Chris Bosh going to the hospital, and then we find out days later that it's a blood clot, it's out for the year, and then all the mounting injuries that happen after, you know, that. I feel robbed. I mean, especially when you consider the way the season started. Obviously, LeBron, you lose LeBron James, that's obviously a big deal. You're not going to replace that guy. But we still commend this team for getting up minutes after, you know, getting Luol Deng in here, which, by the way, I still think is a great move. And, you know, and I know it's corny, the whole Heat Lifer, Heat Nation thing's corny, but it wasn't after Defiance. It was yeah, guess what? We're not going to allow one guy just to define who we are as a franchise. We were a championship team before he got here anyway, and we'll continue to be that kind of culture. But I just feel robbed at the end of the day, because I really thought if Chris Bosh was healthy, and we were actually relatively healthy from the our entire roster, this team could make a lot of noise in the playoffs, in the weak East especially, too.
Yeah. You go.
Oh, it's just, for me, I mean, it's just hard to consider, you know, feeling robbed, because we've been dealing with that all year long. I mean, we haven't had a healthy roster at any point in time. And so you keep thinking to yourself, and you just mentioned that same attitude, you know, what if we had had a healthy roster? But it's like, we played 82 games. We were never going to have a healthy roster. And you said early on that, you know, you wanted to see what this team was going to do in the postseason. What the hell difference would it have made if they had been going up against the postseason? Like, we would have been playing tomorrow or tonight, and we would have had the same team that barely eked out a victory against Philadelphia. Four games in a row. Yeah, you know?
It's just the pride factor more than else for me. It's the pride factor. And look, obviously the right things that happen for us. We're going to get a top 10 pick probably, most likely, and we're going to be able to figure that out. And hey, that pick could be a trade asset. It could be something we keep on this roster long term. But, you know, it is what it is at this point now, and we now look forward to the future, which really is a bright future. Think about it. I mean, all signs point to Goran Dragic staying here long term. You're going to have Hassan Whiteside at least for another year, and hopefully see where that goes if he develops to be the guy that a lot of people project him to be, which is a top tier center, to be honest with you, in this league. And if we'll have him long term. And of course, you still have Dwayne Wade, who this year, you know, even through it all, when he was healthy, and even he was still great this year. He was still an elite player this year. This is actually a very fun time now to be a Heat fan. I mean, I think this year was a kind of a transition year out of the LeBron era into the Big Three era into a new era of what we're doing here. And I got to tell you, I'm actually really excited about this.
What I will go to, I'll ask both of you, but for me, I guess the biggest disappointment of the year. Maybe not even disappointment, but the feeling of Wade played so great, and it feels like it was just wasted. It was a waste. It was a waste of an aging Dwayne Wade, that he was so great, yet no one could support him in that role the way he was playing. That for me is the bit that hurts the most. Yeah. Seeing him gun it in some of those games, you're just like, ah, like, you know, like, he's playing so great. Like, I really hope he can do this next year. But on a positive, this guy's going to have like 6 months rest. That's the greatest thing about this being out. Yeah. Like him and Bosch. Bosch is obviously, he's dealing with what he's dealing with. But, and Mario as well. These guys are going to have 6 months of just hanging out, being, you know, resting, having a lot of sleep. When they were playing the four finals before that, these guys are getting lucky to get 3 months off. Before they came into preseason, right. That is one thing that's great. But I will ask you both, for you, aside from us not making the playoffs, what was your biggest disappointment of the season?
To me, it was, maybe not disappointment necessarily, but I guess the worst moment of the season was Chris Bosh's injury. I mean, I think, you have so much faith in him as a player. And again, what Ernest just alluded to, that whole high hopes with Goran Dragic and everything else, and then to find out that his life might be in jeopardy. So that was a pretty big 24-hour swing in emotions there, similar to like what happened over the summer when LeBron left, and then all of a sudden you get, you know, Chris Bosh signing, and then you have the highs and lows all within a 24-hour period. That to me was the worst thing about the season. Aside from a specific disappointment, I think just never really getting this team healthy. I mean, just the whole lingering kind of hope that, you know, maybe this team will take it to a next level, and it never manifested, because first Wade goes down, then McRoberts never comes back. And, you know, you had this high hope at the beginning of the year that maybe it was going to be a much more San Antonio Spurs-like offense, where you're going to have Luol Deng cutting and Josh McRoberts pitching the ball in from the high post, and you're going to have this ball rotation and movement that we had just seen in the finals, and it just never worked out. So it's just that whole kind of feeling that maybe there's a next corner to turn, and it never happened throughout the course of the season. So that was just a whole lingering disappointment for me.
I'll tell you mine real quick, and mine's more, it's definitely basketball related. It's more so the close games we lost, the Milwaukee game late March, the Detroit game a couple weeks ago, the Philadelphia game back in November, December. I don't have the number on me, but I believe the Heat were 2-3-11 in games tied by 3 points or less. Nice. Obviously, there's like three or four games that stand out. Philly, obviously, early in the year. You look at the Chicago game last week also. Look at the Philly game. The Milwaukee game. And you look at the Detroit game.
Pacers, too.
Right. Now, if either two of those games go our way, we're playing this weekend. And I'm not saying, obviously, I know what's the point. I get that. But if two of those games go our way, we're playing this weekend. That's what's disappointing to me, was the fact that we still couldn't close. And a lot of that, I love Spoelstra. I'm a big Eric Spoelstra fan, and he's his top tier coach. But a lot of that stuff falls on him at the end of the day.
Okay, overall, why couldn't we close? Was it lack of consistency? Was it the young guys who just, you know, got, you know, just went meh, stuff it, I'm tired? What do you think it was? What do you both pinpoint as the reason why we could just never close those games out?
Inconsistency, no trust in each other, not having a consistent roster. Obviously, the fact that we had like 30, what was the number, 34 that ended on Wednesday, David, 34, 35 different starting lineups this year?
I think it was a little bit less, like over 30. I know that much, but still quite a bit. Yeah, it was an all-time franchise record for sure.
Astronomical amount of different lineups we had. That attributes to that, number one, the chemistry, not knowing who's going to be dressed, let alone your starting lineup, day to day, was play a lot into that. But like I said, I think some of that, you know, like I said, the late game stuff could have been masked by just closing out one or two plays. You know, Dwayne Wade throwing up hero shots in the Detroit game, which was unnecessary. I get it's Dwayne Wade, but sometimes if you're the leader, you got to take that on the chin. And I think that stuff, to me, the things you could control, you know, I know obviously you can't control injuries, can't control, you know, health stuff with Chris Bosh, whatnot, but the things you could control, like in the Detroit game and in the Chicago game, that stuff annoyed me this year.
Yeah, I have to agree with you there. I mean, it's interesting to think about what would have happened if Chris Bosh had been healthy, whether or not those, you know, hero ball shot, you know, shot attempts at the end of the games.
Kicked it out to Bosh in the corner and we won. And we'd be playing tomorrow.
You want to hear something really funny, though? I did like two podcasts yesterday about the first round. You know what's so funny? Let's imagine Miami was healthy with Dragic from the All-Star break on. Let's say they're at full strength. Do you realize that the Heat probably could be as high as a 5 seed, considering how bad Washington looked at the end of the year? You can argue Miami could have caught Washington at the end of the year.
Well, we had theorized that. I think we had said that, you know, with the Dragic trade, it would put us with somewhere within the realm of the top four. I mean, that was certainly not out of the realm of possibility, and I think it's certainly something you have to consider. And then you're facing a weaker Washington team, maybe a Toronto team. God, who knows? I mean, I wouldn't have been concerned with the matchup nightmare that Milwaukee was if we have, you know, Chris Bosh in there, even if we have McRoberts in there. I mean, that would have been – maybe he would have come back in the postseason. You never know. It would have changed the dynamic completely for this team. And you think about Milwaukee in particular. You had mentioned it as far as the most disappointing moments of the season. We went 0-4 against the Bucks. We had won 10 straight against this team, and I know that Jason Kidd has done a pretty good job of having a weird lineup there with all that length and it's everything else that he has on that roster. But man, we had won 10 straight against Milwaukee. It just goes to show you how far this team has dropped, in that you lose four straight to this team. And I know that Chris Middleton shot at the end of the game, that was a real heartbreaker there. But still, that one really hurts, doesn't it? I mean, you know, that was like one of the worst games of the season.
You know, Milwaukee's always got the bad taste in my mouth, because my first ever Heat game ever was a Bucks game back in '92. And we lost big, and that team wasn't that good either.
Well, my first playoff game was 2013, and that was the Bucks. So I have great memories of that.
Oh my!
4-0. How times have changed. But what was I going to say? Oh, this was going to say. What's funny is this is going to sound. You know, it all makes sense that the Nets are there in 8th seed. Yet I really feel we're so much better than them.
Oh, yeah. We're better than.
It's just so odd, isn't it? Funny. I would have preferred the Pacers to be in the 8th. I would have preferred to have seen Paul George do some stuff. What about you guys?
No.
No? Well,
No. I'm 100% against that.
Why? David, are you doing the whole, enemy? Oh, my God.
If there was anything positive about the way the playoffs wound up, is that the Pacers don't go in it either. I'll be 100% honest with you. Look, I didn't want to see Paul George get hurt in the last game of the season, but to think about them sulking at home the way they have been over the last few years suits me just fine. I'm cool with it, 100%.
Like, I mean, they're a bit like, the positive about us being bailed out by injuries is that it happened to the Pacers and it's happened to OKC as well. So we've kind of, not that we've got people feeling sorry for us, but we kind of got away with, you know, skimming out of the playoffs and not being harassed
Haley,
that much.
You know what's sad though, the whole thing though? Like, everything we all projected to happen with the rest of the Eastern Conference did happen. Like, we all assumed that, like, the middle teams, Toronto, Washington, and Milwaukee come back to the pack, and they did. They all came back to the pack. The problem is, though, Miami didn't regress also, and then the bottom teams got better, you know, as the year went on. So, like I said, if this team was at full strength, there's no question we could have been a 5 seed at least in the Eastern Conference this weekend.
Well, you know what? Despite not making the playoffs, let's move forward onto some positive things.
Okay.
Firstly, I'll ask you both, does, you know, picking up Hassan and Dragic kind of make the season a win?
Yes.
Because of the results of everything else that happened?
Yes, absolutely. Because if you're telling me going into this year, you lose LeBron James and you have a, even though it was worse than we thought, we knew it was a conundrum at the point guard position and we didn't know if Chris Bosh was going to be able to handle being a center going into the year. If you're telling me that, yeah, we missed the playoffs, but we came away this season with a elite point guard in Jordan Dragic and then a center in Hassan Whiteside, who actually shows a lot more upside, yeah, it's a win at the end of the day because it's a long-term possibility. Yeah, we sacrificed one bad year for a possibility of a team being in the mix for the conference title next year and years to come. So, yeah, it's a win in that aspect, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree 100%. I mean, those were two positions of weakness throughout the Big Three era. And now, and no offense to Mario Chalmers and Norris Cole, but you know, now we have a much better player in Goran Dragic and Hassan Whiteside. That potential is, I think, pretty unlimited, you know.
So you're saying that, you know, you're more excited about the Dragic and Hassan pickup than back in July 2014, when we got McBob and Granger.
But of course. What's Granger now?
Doesn't that seem so long ago?
Yes, it does.
Oh, I mean, well, you know what? It was funny because at the time, you know, we were all analyzing what Miami's mentality was. You know, these both of those players had some run-ins with LeBron in the past, and you're thinking to yourself, is this a way, like Shabazz Napier, of maybe appeasing to LeBron James? Maybe they already know he's going to re-sign here. There were so many questions about it, and then you know, obviously it backfired a little bit. But
that was such a catfish.
It was, wasn't it?
It really was. Bastard.
Yeah. sure was, though. But, you know, when those moves were made, though, we would make them with the assumption that LeBron would be back. Because, I mean, those guys can be more effective with LeBron on the lineup as opposed to the other way around. But
well, hell, I mean, I would have been more effective with LeBron in the lineup, too. I mean,
of course. I'll ask you guys. Yeah. Well, I read somewhere someone said, oh, we've got a really rough offseason ahead. Do you think this offseason is going to be a lot more successful than the one of the
Let me ask you
last
question.
One?
Let me ask
what
you
are you thinking? How are you feeling?
Let me ask you, did that person elaborate why they see it's rough, or did they just set it out of their ass to say it?
Yeah, you know, probably just out of their ass because they feel like got like pressure on us and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
What do you guys think? You know what? Let's start and talk about who we've got. Today we had a exit interview. Not we, but the Miami Heat had their exit interviews, and a lot of things have come out of that. Firstly, we'll start with Goran Dragic. He has opted out. Positive, you know. Everything.
Yeah, for sure, but, that something he said is going to happen.
Yeah, but he's like, you know, he's what was that?
He's going to opt out. He hasn't officially, but he said he's going to opt out.
Okay.
Oh, sorry, my bad. My wording. Okay. Let's start with that. On a positive, I mean, this is stupid because LeBron's wife is pregnant as well, so I thought he wasn't going anywhere, but Dragic's wife is pregnant, so I like to think, oh, you know what, they're going to stay here in this climate because it's what they're kind of used to with where they come from. You know, that was kind of my theory, that they're not going to go anywhere. What do you guys think are going to happen with Goran?
I think he'll resign. I think he's going to take big money, and I think Miami's going to try and do whatever they can to maybe not necessarily lowball him, but try to get him at the best value possible without.
When you talk big money, what are you thinking?
I don't think they'll go to a max contract because I just don't know at his age, given everything that he's done. You know, he's not
How
necessarily.
How old is he now? I've forgotten. Sorry. How old
I think
is he?
He's about 28. I want to say
29.
That's okay. So I mean, fairly young-ish, but you don't want to commit that kind of like a 5-year deal. You know, he'll be along with, you know, McRobertson, Bosch, the only players that'll be re-signed to a long-term deal in Miami. So I think they'll try to give him as much money as possible in the hope that, you know, when the salary cap explodes in 2016, maybe it won't seem like such a big hit on the cap. But at the same time, you're not quite sure what he's going to be like in 4 years. And being the kind of player that he is, you know, he's not like Dwayne Wade getting knocked down to the floor all the time, but he's had back problems, and those are the kind of lingering issues that you don't necessarily ever come back from. You don't want those to impede him later on, and it's certainly going to affect his ability to finish at the rim, you know, at such a high percentage as he ages into his career. So they'll fall just short of the max contract, let's say. But I think he will re-sign with Miami. I think it's a great fit for him. He's already talking about the future, about wanting to play with Vic Roberts and with Chris Bosh and all the different kind of versatile lineups that you can include there. So to me, he seems like a player who's already committed to being in Miami.
Yeah.
I'm just going to – yeah. What do you think, Ennis?
No, no. I think it's all signs point there. I don't think Pat Riley you know, throws away 2 first-round draft picks if you not don't have it in mind that this guy's going to be a long-term possibility for this franchise. Yeah, I have no doubts he'll be back. The issue I'll see is the money and how much they pay him. But I mean, like, there's no state tax here. I don't see a lot of teams clamoring for him. I mean, maybe the Lakers or the Knicks maybe would go after him or something. But I think Miami, given what where they're not far off from being where he wants to be, which is a championship contending team, and and location, of course, which is a big deal for him apparently. And whatnot, and this is the culture here. I mean, he's gotten a piece of the culture for 2 months, and he loves it.
You know what? I have to correct myself. I assumed that Slovenia was like really hot and sunny, like Miami, but it's not. So I have to retract.
Okay.
when you mentioned that, I thought you were referring to his time in Phoenix, and I'm like, yeah, sure, it's hot here in comparison, but not quite like Slovenia.
Yeah, no, but I think, I think, you know, still you'll have a lot of say. He's going to be able to play the position he wants to play here in Miami, as opposed to what he did in Phoenix, being the in-and-out guy. I put on a 95% chance, 99.9% chance that he resigns here. I mean, obviously,
Would you think of like a better team than Miami?
A better team
on paper, perhaps a team that's doing really well.
No, I don't.
Do you think if they offer something, he'll go? You know, because this guy's been sitting out of the playoffs for so long. He's probably bummed he didn't get to, you know, make it through this year.
The things, I don't see any teams that are better than us that actually have a need at that position right now. Like, all the teams that are good already have that position filled. So I don't see the need that anywhere else. And like I said, Miami would be the better one of those better teams with him in the lineup and at full strength. So I just don't see that happening. Like I said, I think the Lakers, maybe, you know, the Knicks, teams like that, may actually try to vie for services just to see what they can get. Sure. But ultimately, I think Miami is a
ooh, you know what? I'm going to throw you with something really
go ahead.
Dumb. You just mentioned Lakers. You know, Swaggy P. he's a relatively cheap shooter, well, possibly coming off.
Well, we're here.
Would you like
him? Well, if I'm not mistaken, I heard a report this week that he's on a trade deadline. A trading box, I'd say. Or they're going to consider trading him. He annoys me.
He's a dick, but he's a fun dick.
No, he's a fun guy. He's the opposite of J.R. Smith. You know, he's a more likable J.R. Smith.
Yeah, he's very likable.
Yeah,
he's just got that. I'm thinking of his smile. He's just fun, but he can shoot. He's cheap.
Well, I tell you what, that's probably one of the biggest needs of the Heat this year is getting shooters.
Yeah, cheap outside shooters.
Yeah, but he's so inconsistent, though. I mean, does he fit into the model there? I can tell you that from what Miami's done in the past, they took a chance with a guy like McRoberts. Not McRoberts, I'm sorry, like I'm thinking Chris Anderson. And then they took another chance with Whiteside as far as their, you know, their past, their troubles, whatever you want to call it. I don't know that a guy like Nick Young is somebody that they'd want on their roster. They seem far too conservative for taking a chance on a guy like that.
This could be my my movement over to the Michael Beasley question now.
Oh, here we go.
let's talk about the Bees. He turns 27. It's funny. It feels like he's been around for a decade, but he's so young. Like, he's super young. Turns 27 next year, I think.
Yeah. He's still young.
What are we thinking?
I think he's done. And
flick him off.
I don't want that to be the case, but judging from what I saw in today's exit interview about Henry Walker, it looks like Spoelstra and the coaching staff and the front office maybe seem to have more confidence in a guy like that, despite how the fan base sort of turned on him because of his low shooting percentage from the perimeter. But I guess they just don't have that same kind of confidence in Michael Beasley. I don't know. It seems to me like maybe his career in the NBA is done, and that's a shame because I think he really turned it around this year from a personality perspective, and he certainly did more work. He did yeoman-like work on defense as well, so that was something we hadn't seen from him throughout his career at all. So I'm not sure.
Yeah, it could just be obviously Walker's – he gone to the bottom end and come back, just like his son. Maybe it's something like, again, Beasley, he's kind of someone who's probably thinks, oh, I'm always going to get picked up, you know, or maybe he has in fact come into his own, that he is, you know, maturing and realizing, you know, shit, my money's going down. I really should try and make some more. Well,
yeah, he did say that, though. I mean, he mentioned that, yeah, several times, that he saw China as the low point in his career. And then when he got re-signed by Miami, he said, look, I mean, I'm not going to get a phone call from anybody else. This is my last opportunity.
Maybe the thing is, he got picked up too quickly after China. Maybe he should have sat around for a year and, you know, or done 6 months of like actual nothing happening in his life to really go, I'm really going to do this.
To be fair to Beasley, though, too, though, he actually was doing a lot of things that he never did in his first two stints here. I mean, remember, the injuries were so bad, we had him playing center a couple times.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought, like, remember that Kings game he was playing this boogie?
Yeah. Boogie? DeMarcus Cousins remembers him.
Just the effort was great. I mean, he took six fouls in the chin. So, I mean, look, here's the thing with Beasley. If we're judging him as the number two draft pick in the 2008 draft still, then you don't want that guy. But if he's your ninth or tenth best player in the roster, it isn't the worst thing in the world. I'm sure Miami will at least consider it, but it all depends on what they do this summer with their roster and who they're going to bring in.
We'll go through some names now. What do we think of Zoran Dragic? Is he going to hang around?
Yeah, he's a package piece with Goran. He's a package. Yeah.
He's due $1.7 million next season.
Oh, God. That's terrible.
Is he good, Dave?
Is he good?
Yeah. I mean, okay, I'll tell you what. He's due $1.7 next
season. He's not $1.7 million good, I'll tell you that much. Okay. I mean, he's got some ability. He's got some height.
Okay, we've got him. Then you've got Tyler Johnson.
I like him.
He's got
a partially guaranteed salary for next season.
He's a keeper. I think it's worth bringing him back.
Who would you prefer to keep? Johnson or Zoran?
Johnson.
For sure. Agreed.
Yeah, but I don't think you can risk, you know, moving Zoran Dragic and not pissing off his brother, so I think they're both staying.
It's a waste. I know, but it's like, oh, that money.
Yeah,
Tyler's, you know, 845. You could get two Tylers.
Well, Miami will be in luxury next year regardless. It doesn't even matter.
Look at it from that perspective, you know, Goran Dragic is going to be the most highly paid player in the league if he gets a max contract, because it's his contract and his brother's. So he's actually worth two contracts at once.
Do you think Wade could have been a good guy and opt out and give us a bargain?
Again?
No.
He's out there one more year, and I think it's only right that he does that for himself. You know, he's not enough for this franchise.
Certainly.
I mean, I'm sure he'll consider, you know, taking a decent size contract going forward after next year, in terms of what we do for the future. But you know, Dwayne Wade's not so much this franchise beyond just on the court, but off the court too. He is our ambassador. I mean, and being a fan for 26 years, man, I mean Dwayne Wade has been our guy. You know, he's done so much. He's proven that, brought titles here.
Bosch will obviously be that next guy.
Statue is coming.
You think so? Chris Bosch? Bosch, you think, is that kind of player?
Well, I think after Wade goes. I mean, do you think Wade – okay, let's have a talk. Do you think Wade will do one more season then leave? Yes. That's what I think. So then that makes me think Bosch has got 3 years left to be the leader.
Well, because having Hassan Whiteside actually extends Bosch's career. I mean, look at Dirk Nowitzki.
On that contract. I mean, like the 5 years.
I mean, look, let's say you've got Bosch on a max deal. You get Dragic on a near max deal. If you can re-sign Whiteside for another type max deal, you're not going to have that kind of money to throw around. But maybe you can get Dwayne Wade back towards the end of his career. Maybe give him a nice couple years, maybe like a Kevin Garnett type deal where he can.
Bench all the time.
Well, I mean, yeah, but Minnesota loves it, though. I think they love him having him.
But Wade is going to be, like, within the organization anyway.
I don't
like,
see Wade.
Get rid of him.
I don't see Wade.
Keep him out like as some, you know, mentor off the court.
I don't think
Dwayne. Save that money.
Right. But I don't think Dwayne wants to leave anyway. I don't think he wants. I don't think he has any interest in leaving this franchise anyway. So.
No.
Of course not.
He might have a few years left of playing to him too. I mean, look how effective he was when he was on the court. And I know a lot of that has to do with his usage rate, and maybe that's why he was shooting those shots towards the end of the game. Nobody else was there to take those shots. But he had those string of games in March where he was really sensational. You know, against the Cavs, against the Trailblazers.
Player of the week.
You know. Yeah.
So nice that he's rested. Like, that's so exciting.
Yeah, I'm hoping he'll play. 60-something games next year as well, and you can afford to have them miss a few games here and there, provided that Dragic is re-signed, that Whiteside is healthy and part of the team. You know, there's so much to look forward to there, especially when Chris Bosh comes back.
The blueprint's there. Tim Duncan's done it. I mean, the blueprint is there. Tim Duncan is about to win number six this year and probably retire after that, okay?
Oh, wow.
The blueprint's there. Oh, yeah, you heard that, right? Football prediction? Yeah, you heard that.
No. Henry Walker, he's got a $1.1 million partially guaranteed salary. So next season will be his second season. Yeah. Happy to have him around?
Yeah, I think so.
I'm with you.
Anyone?
Well, I mean, they seem to like.
Wait, he can shoot threes.
He can, although he started missing them at a pretty alarming rate. But I mean, he had a few big games there. But maybe it's what you alluded to in that, you know, this is a player who's been tested, who knows that he doesn't have many opportunities elsewhere. Right. They like what he brings to the table, and he played anywhere from the 2 to 4 spot. So I mean, you've got some versatility there, and I think that's what they're looking for. Yeah, they wanted to have
a bunch. He's 28 at the end of the year. Like he's a decent age. Like. Get a couple of good years out of him. He plays hard.
Right.
He's a bit of a mini UD sometimes, yeah. I feel.
Well, the thing is, you bring in Bosch, you bring in McRoberts back, and all of a sudden you're limited as far as options are concerned in your front court. So it's going to come down to, you know, they're going to draft somebody probably unless they find a way to, you know, trade that draft pick. But chances are they're going to – go ahead.
No, you go. I was just going to say, do you think they'll trade the pick?
Absolutely.
I don't think so.
I think they will.
I don't know.
Depending on who's out there. It depends who's out there in free agency.
Yeah, I don't think they will. I think they'll take a young front court player that they can continue to develop, maybe somebody with some size that they can take as a backup plan if and when Whiteside leaves. Anderson is pretty much done after this deal ends, so I'm not sure that he's going to stick around, you know, past next season. So if you're asking me, I think they keep the pick for the, you know, go against type. You know, I think they learned a lesson this year in that it's important to develop young players. They have a good farm system with a D-League and the Sioux Falls Skyforce. That's something they've never had before. This organization has never really cared for draft picks. Clearly, when they traded the 2 first-rounders for Goran Dragic, but they fell ass backwards into one thinking that they were going to make the playoffs, and all of a sudden now they have a top-10 pick available to them. I think they use it, they pick it, they get a player on the cheap, somebody that they can continue to develop. Look, they can stash him in Sioux Falls if they really need to. They can bring him up if he shows a lot of talent. I think they keep that pick and they use it on a front-court player. And so that's why, to me, it's going to come down to either Henry Walker or Michael Beasley making the roster, and that's why I think Beasley is out.
I agree, David.
Cool.
Wow. I turned everything around real quickly there.
David Romero, you sold me.
Too bad I have no idea what I'm talking about. So other than that, it works out perfect.
Stop it, buddy.
You good, Ennis?
No, I'm good. I agree, David. Okay. I agree with him.
Now, again, moving forward, if Goran Dragic and Chalmers remain in the rotation, which obviously they possibly will, if Dragic signs, this could lead to limitations for Shabazz Napier moving forward. What do we think of Baz?
I think it's a similar deal there where you
he's 1.3 million.
Yeah, I think he sticks on roster. Again, you can have him play some games. I mean, he wound up having that hernia that limited him towards the end of the year. But, you know, the Chalmers contingency plan isn't going to extend beyond next season, and you'll probably let him go at that point. If you re-sign Dragic, let's say, you're going to have him for a number of years. Let's say you're going to part ways with Chalmers at the end of next season, let him leave via free agency. You've still got a cheap point guard the way that you had Norris Cole, you know, as a restricted free agent for a couple of years. So I think you keep Shabazz Napier in the fold, have him develop, have him go up against Dragic, learn a little bit, maybe develop a little bit more on defense. I think it's worth keeping him around.
Hey guys, got to ask you. Just quick side note, then we'll get to you, Ernest. Got to ask you, what happened to our Rio Sixth Man of the Year?
Hey man, he lost his shuffle. I mean, you know, like I said before, when he had a defined role early in the year, and also when Dragic got here originally, he played his best basketball at that time. So I'm not going to knock him. But I will say this, though. Don't be surprised if the Heat trade him or try to trade him this summer.
Do we think the best of Mario is done?
There has been no
MVP for Miami.
He's been the same guy since his rookie year. He hasn't changed. He's the same guy. He's a good shooter at times, good spot shooter. He's solid. He's a solid, serviceable point guard, but he's not a guy. I mean, he is who he is. He's not going to get better than who he is.
I think he's always going to be inconsistent.
He's not terrible, but I mean, he has balls of steals, though. I will tell you that.
Yeah.
I mean, he will make big shots for you, but he'll also make dumb plays.
So, I think he's always going to have psychological head noise that affects his game.
I like that. I don't love that.
I don't think he's a guy that can shut it out.
That was an excellent.
I think it gets to him, and then he just becomes, you know.
Can I use that one day? Can I use that one day? That was excellent, the way you described him. That was excellent.
What
you just said about Chalmers. That was excellent.
Oh, no, but it's true. Like, it's just what it's like. I just don't think he, you know, some people get it. Some people evolve. But then, unfortunately, there are just these guys who are just mentally weak.
He's not a bad player. No, he's not weak. He's not mentally weak at all.
I think he's a bit mentally weak. He lets his emotional side.
He's easily distracted. How about that?
Yeah, he's like Beasley in a sense, but probably a little more solid, a little more stable, I guess.
I don't know that you're going to get anything more out of Chalmers than what we've done. I mean, he probably had more of, you know, some more production this year than he would have had at any point in his career.
And
you know,
that's right. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. I mean, it didn't translate into anything. But
this was meant to be his moment. LeBron was gone.
Well, I will say this. I will say this though, because it's being his last year in his contract. Going to next year, there is still a chance for him to, you know, showcase himself to be a good player. Maybe other teams will want him for more money, and it will benefit Miami the next year too. So who knows?
Absolutely. Yeah, contract Chalmers will be interesting to watch because it might be. If anything's going to keep him from being distracted, you know, as you pointed out, Haley, I think maybe it might be the allure of possibly getting one more deal because he's obviously a young player. He's still got a lot of playing time left. Yeah. So, you know, if you resign Dragic and you have him kind of filling that combo role off the bench, maybe it'll be just enough to get him focused and rein him in a little bit so that he can be as productive and as efficient as possible. It's not just about production. It's about being efficient and limiting those mental mistakes.
All I ask of Chalmers is please shave that patchy beard.
Oh, I know what's happening. Okay, Luol Deng.
That's a story.
Let's go.
That's a big story of the summer for the Heat, really, be honest.
I'd be quite happy if he was gone.
No, okay. No.
I want to hear this because I've seen a lot on the Twitter about this, and I want to know what the hell happened there because I know he's been wildly inconsistent, but he's been that throughout his whole career, and he still works really hard, and he played the second most number of games from any Heat player this year, so he was obviously not limited by injury. But everybody seems to have turned on him, and they think he's a hot pile of garbage.
I haven't turned. I just think we could get – you know, I'd rather get a couple of young shooters for that money.
Well, he's gonna opt in number one unless he decides he wants multiple years on a contract. But
what's his contract? I've got nothing in front of him.
He has an option here.
He's got a player option for 10 years. Yeah, he's got a player option for $10 million, and that's you know, after that, who knows what'll happen? So maybe you're right. Maybe he'll opt out and try to get a 4-year deal where he can get maybe 18-19 million somewhere around there, maybe 20. You know, so it'll be less money per year, but it'll be more money overall.
I'm not saying he's a bad player or anything. I just think with Bosch, Wade, Dragic, Whiteside, blah blah blah. I just think we could. Right. It wouldn't be the worst thing if for some reason they tried to figure out what they could do with his money.
Well, he mentioned that you know it was particularly stark for him because he was being used as a standstill shooter, something he'd never done throughout the course of his career. He wasn't very comfortable with it. He's more of a cutter, a slasher. And he alluded to the fact that, you know, had Mick Roberts been out there, that would have been his boy because, you know, he would have been able to find him with that, you know, that pitch.
Yeah.
And, you know, it would have definitely expanded his game.
Did he score more with his time with Dragic on the floor? Does anyone know?
Yes, he did.
Started off that way.
Played better. And here's a misnomer about Luol Deng. And this is why people on Twitter who start getting like pissy about him all the time, I wonder if they actually know basketball, because Luol Deng's a slasher. He's a cutter. That's all he is, really, at the end of the day. Right. They didn't have him playing that. And when you have to start the year with point guards named Norris Cole, Mario Chalmers, and Sebastian Napier, who don't know how to shoot the ball properly and not playing to his strengths, you're gonna get frustration there. Obviously, you're gonna get his strength. Okay.
I'll say that the concern, though, not to change the point a little bit, but I support Luol Deng and I'm hopeful that he'll turn it around. But I think the issue was that you're going to get 23 points from him on Tuesday, and then you're going to get 4 on Thursday, and that's way too inconsistent for a player making $10 million and potentially in the midst of a playoff race. And that's why a lot of people turn.
But
on
a lot of that also goes to the fact that he's not being used to his strengths. I mean, he's not a spot up shooter, and that's what he was relegated to at the end of the year. When Gordon got here in February, you saw the first couple of games. He was playing great because Gordon is a great distributor, and he was doing the things that that helps Luol Deng's strength, and then we went away from that for a while. So people didn't understand the Luol Deng's strength, and they assume that he's replaced LeBron. And you want to see this guy create off the dribble. He's not that guy, but he is a great defender though.
Yeah, I mean, look, he's got positives, and I really like him as a person. I think that's what makes it very difficult, at least personally. Oh,
get the emotions out of it.
Oh boy.
But why would I do that? That's why the only reason why I watch basketball in the first place.
You like him as a person. Oh, he's a good guy. Let's keep him. Nah.
Well, no. Okay, I won't go that far. But, I mean, I want him to succeed. You know, that's the thing. Yeah, and to me, you know, I appreciate the fact that he signed with Miami when LeBron left. And I'll never forget that. But at the same time, I understand the criticism. But it just turned so sour so quickly. And that's why I asked you to kind of elaborate a little bit. Because, you know, I haven't seen this before where all of a sudden everybody's like, oh, yeah, go Luol Deng. And next thing you know, it's like, oh, fuck you, Luol Deng. Get the hell out of here.
Yeah, I think it's just for his salary. I think that's what it is. People just want value for money. And they feel they're not getting it.
He Twitters ridiculous, though. He Twitters ridiculous. So...
I hate Homer Twitter. I can't be. I have so many of you on mute. telling you. Not you two, obviously, but many people. I'm just like, I just do not want to hear this heat. Hey, I just no interest. I have no interest in Homer thinking. James Ennis, yes or no?
Yes. He caught on pretty well at the end of the year. He caught on well at the end of the year. He did. He started playing well.
Definitely.
He got minutes.
Yeah, he's a long term prospect there, and I think he's going to definitely blossom a bit next year. I mean, he turned it around.
He's young. He's 25 this year.
Yeah. Too much talent, and he's got expanded shooting range. I mean, look, all you have to do is improve that dribble a little bit so he can create his own shot, and next thing you know, he's going to be an all-star. I think he's got that potential.
And just think a bit. Just think a bit when he's defending. That might be nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Still a bit young in the head and erratic.
The things that he needs to develop can be. It's not
it
like,
comes with experience.
Exactly, yeah. And, you know, I think Miami's looking for a Kawhi Leonard type. You're not going to get that quite out of James Ennis because his hands are too small, obviously. But, I mean, he's got the athleticism at least, so I think that's going to be a big plus for him moving forward.
We've got two more people we're going to talk about. Josh McRoberts.
Oh, yeah.
What is the latest injury update on McBob? Does anyone know?
He's doing well.
I mean,
is he practicing yet? No.
No. Well, not. I mean, no on-court activity, I think. But, well, maybe a little bit, actually. I think I had heard when he traveled with the team during their recent road trip that he was practicing with the team a little bit. But at the same time, I don't know if that's something long-term there.
At what point do Heat management coaches, whatever... Yeah, I know they want him and they want a prospect, but at what point, say we get to June, July, he's still not practicing, what point do you kind of decide if you want to keep pursuing this project?
Well, look, if he's not practicing by then, I think they're wound up stuck with him. I mean, because you can't just fool any kind of NBA franchise into thinking that he's all of a sudden going to become healthy. And I don't think anybody's willing to take 3 years and $15 million for a guy who's never going to come back to even the kind of player he was. I know there was a lot of concern about him in particular, that he was a journeyman. He never really blossomed until that year in Charlotte. And now maybe Miami committed too much to a guy like that, even though he does have a wide array of skills. But I don't think you can trade him unless he's healthy. And so that's why if he's going to be traded at all, it'll be next year when he shows he still has some ability left, when he thrives in Miami. Next thing you know, maybe you can package him together with a guy like maybe Chalmers, mm-hmm. and maybe you can move some of that expiring contract around and get somebody back in return for him.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Ernest?
No, I agree with him. I think he could be a trade asset, possibly. Although I like to see him gel well with this team moving forward. I think he would. I think he could. And with the depth and the passing and some of the guys that could be better off his strength, I think
we've got to remember that was just for a short stint at Charlotte. You know, it wasn't didn't play like that for 5 years in a row.
One year under
Steve
Clifford.
He took a gamble on it.
Yeah, it worked. And, you know, it was a contract year, so maybe it's, another type of situation where he was really playing well because he knew he had an expiring.
Like Luke Norris.
I mean, he's worth the money. He's
he was
worth
playing
the money.
Good for his contract.
Well, he's worth the money when he's healthy. I mean, he's only getting, per year.
Well,
like
we don't know
year,
that.
So.
Well, we don't
know
that. If it's the Charlotte version of McBob, then $5 million.
But that's what I'm assuming. That was the last full year we saw him.
Okay.
And he was really good. I mean, so
What if we're getting Lakers McBob, you know, or Indiana Pacers McBob, where he's shooting 20-something percent from the perimeter and he's not really making those kind of passes?
Let's think positive here, David.
Oh, well.
Okay, if we want to be positive, we'll go to our lucky last, our beloved, our flower in the mist, Hassan Whiteside.
Oh, Hassanity runs wild, brother. he obviously will be back next year. Interesting, because he's getting paid just under $1 million next year. And it's a contract year. And obviously the issues we have, people are going to be concerned about, is whether he's mature enough to handle being in the spotlight. That's going to be the biggest question next season for Hassan Whiteside. Otherwise, it will be interesting to see if it's funny, our Winderman actually made a, not, this is not a rumor or anything like that, but he said he wouldn't be shocked if that he considered trading him if they were to get a big man in the draft this year, depending on what happens and all that. But it will be interesting to see what happens next year. I think Hassan Whiteside, his time is next year. He can make a lot of money if he does the right thing, says the right thing, and stays in line. And he's on the right franchise to do it. So let's see what happens. I think next year is a huge year for his life and his career.
I agree that he's definitely a prospect and has a load of potential. But my concern is that you're going to have, let's say you re-sign Dragic, you have Chris Bosh back, and all of a sudden you've got three guys that, and along with Dwayne Wade, who are all-stars, four if you include Luol Deng. You know they're going to get their shots, too. All of a sudden you have Whiteside playing for a contract. Do you think he'll take the backseat that he needs to and understand his role as just a role player? Because he's not going to get the kind of production that we saw from him against Chicago and other games like that. He's not going to be a 20-point guy, not with Chris Bosh making $20-something million a year. So all of a sudden, you're going to start eating into his shots, and you've already got these existing maturity issues. Is he going to be the kind of guy who says, you know, I understand I'm okay with just getting 10 points, 11 rebounds, 3 blocks a game, knowing that Miami is going to do right by me and still give me a pretty good deal? Or is he going to say, hell with that, I'm going to get mine and maybe kind of upset the apple cart a little bit?
I think he's going to be fine with that. I think he gets off on blocks and rebounds. I think he feels comfortable enough in being in that role and being that big guy. I think he'd be happy with maybe 6 points a game.
More comfortable with low production and not getting $20 million a year?
Well, that's
because, I mean, that's what he's yeah, well, but, I mean, I don't know that he's going to get a max deal in 2016-17, but, I mean, you know, if he gets, let's say he does 20 and 10 next year, he kind of, you know, screws the whole system over and says, to hell with that, I'm going to get my points no matter how I can get them. You know, he doesn't pass out of the low post right now, so what makes you think he's going to do it next year when he's playing for a contract? Do you think he's you know, comfortable saying, oh, 6 points a game is fine so long as Miami throws $10 million my way, knowing that he could potentially make twice that if he gets his points?
Well,
I'll throw this one to Ernest.
Go ahead. No. Well, I will say this, though. How he handles it will be the biggest question. Because, once again, that falls to the whole maturity question mark for next season. How he handles it. Because this stuff will leak out to other teams. Trust me. How he handles chemistry-wise and whatnot, that will leak out to other teams. If he's not going to be a guy that's going to fall in line in a way, then he'll hurt his own value going forward.
That's a good point. I didn't consider that, but you're right. I mean, if you know, you've already got a couple strikes against you as far as your personality is concerned. If all of a sudden you derail Miami's potential title hopes because you want to get yours, then no team.
Yeah, we don't owe you. They don't owe you anything. They took you under their wing. What were you doing for before December?
I think Bosh and Wade will be so in his ear. I think he'll respect them and he'll do what he needs to do.
You got to trust the system.
You can't overlook UD. He's going to be there just like he was that time when he got thrown out against Kelly Olynyk. I think he's going to go in there and tell him, look, young man, you can't go do that.
And that was all. I mean, this year was a trial and error learning wise for him, I think.
And he's going to
Like chuck him in the summer league. He'll be there, get some more reps.
Oh, he's not going to play summer league.
Yeah, he will.
No, he's not. No, on Whiteside?
No way.
No, he's not.
No,
they asked him all that.
We'll see him for a little bit.
No. They asked him. He laughed it off. He didn't even answer. He didn't even say that he was going to or not. Like, it was so ludicrous to him. It's like, you're not getting him in Summer League. He's not playing there.
Okay, fair enough.
I think he thinks that he's proven. And, you know, they just, in the exit interview, they said that they've got a whole development program for him. And I think a lot of that's going to be, you know, working the ball out of the low post and continue to be a more effective scorer down low. I mean, he's already got the skill for it. He's got the agility. So now you're just going to hope that he stays healthy. But I don't think Summer League is for him. I don't think that's...
I know it's not for him, but maybe he will if he wants to.
Oh, I'd love to see it. I'd love to see it.
That's your risk more than else. But, yeah, we shall see. It's going to be a very interesting summer going forward. And like I said, I think the no state tax thing gives Miami a big edge because, you know, like I said, teams can offer the money, but like L.A., it's a highly taxed state. So Miami could offer less, but he's keeping all that money as opposed to like getting taxed in Los Angeles. So...
Yeah.
Miami has an advantage in the no state tax.
Okay, well, you know what? We could talk all day, but we're not going to. Let's just wrap this up with our highlight moment of the season. I'm going to start. It was clearly Christmas Day. I will never forget that. It was a magical moment. I wish we had more of them. That, for me, was just a great moment being a Heat fan this season. What about you, David?
To me, the number one game of the year, and I know we've talked about it a number of times, that beautiful game against Dallas back in November. It was the sign of things to come. We weren't sure what was going to happen. It was before all the injuries took place, and we saw that kind of Spursy-like offense where we had 42 made field goals and 33 of them were assisted. Luol Deng had 30 points. This was even before, you know, Hassan Whiteside. We didn't even know he was a blip on the radar. Sean Williams was knocking down 5 of 6 3-point. That was the glorious moment in this terrible season.
Sure. You, Ennis?
You know that win against Utah back in December? No, I'm kidding. I'm so joking. Christmas Day, both Cavs wins, actually.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you why, because both those wins, people forget, we missed Chris Bosh in both those wins.
Oh, hell yeah.
Keep forgetting that.
No one remembers that. That we came to those games not at full strength. Dwayne Wade went ape shit in both those games. So those are my favorite wins of the year. Obviously, also the Clippers win also in January. Hassan Whiteside's breakthrough game.
Oh yeah, yeah, that was a very good one. Very good game.
Okay, guys. Well, that's it for today.
Okay.
Well, I'm sure we can do this again when things happen, when we've got some news, but. That was us, David Rimmel, Ernest Christian, HotHotHoops.com. Check out all articles coming into the draft. Lots of things happening. Follow, do it all. Thanks so much, guys.
Absolutely.